could shatter a mind into ones and zeros, pure number. There was no doubt that he was here. The door closed behind us, and another irised ahead, revealing a much larger space, like the inside of a cathedral. The room was bathed in golden light, yet its extremities were so far away that they were lost in shadow. I could see the slight curvature of Refuge's floor, an effect accentuated by the interlocking bronze and silver chevrons which patterned the floor. The air smelled of incense. A man sat in the distance, in the middle of a pool of brighter light shafting from a stained glass window far above. He sat facing away from us, in a high-backed chair of ornate construction, wreathed in gold. A trio of slender bipedal servitors stood a few meters from the chair, presumably awaiting instructions. I studied the shape of his head, almost lost in shadow itself, and knew that I was standing behind Rivage. I remembered when I thought I had seen him, near the immortal fish in Chasm City, how quickly I had reacted, slipping out my gun and chasing around the fish tank to confront and kill him. I was sure that I would have done so if Voronov had not been a second faster than I. Now I didn't feel any pressing need to kill him. A voice, like sandpaper rasping against sandpaper, said, "Turn me around so that I may face my guests, please." The statement itself was a labored thing, punctuated by wheezes and words less spoken than whispered. One of the servitors stepped forward, treading with the inhuman silence of their kind, and swiveled Rivage around. What faced us was not what I was expecting. It was not possible. Rivage looked like a corpse, a cadaver briefly animated by the application of electrical puppetry. He did not look like anything living. He did not look like anything which had a right to speak, or to be able to curve his mouth in the semblance of a smile. He reminded me of a less healthy version of Marco Ferris. We could see only his head and the tips of his fingers. The rest of him was lost beneath a thick quilted blanket, from which trailed medical feed lines, curving around into a compact life support module clamped to one arm of the chair, a smaller version of the cuirass which I had used to keep Geeta alive while I returned her body to the reptile house. His head was little more than a skull around which skin had been draped, skin which was mottled black where it wasn't already a shade of bruised purple. His eye sockets had been enucleated. Fine cables trailed from the darkness between his lids, running into the same life support module. There were only a few wisps of hair left on his crown, like the few trees which will always remain standing directly under an air blast. His jaw hung slackly open, his tongue a black slug filling his mouth. He raised a hand. Apart from a few liver spots, it was that of a much younger man. "I see you're disturbed," Rivage said. I realized now that the voice didn't come from him at all, but from the life support module. It still sounded feeble. Presumably even the act of sub-vocalizing was an effort to him. "You did it," Quirrenbach said, stepping closer to the man he still worked for. "You took the scan." "Either that or I didn't get enough sleep last night," Rivage said, his voice like wind. "On balance, I'm inclined to think the former."
"What happened?" I asked. "What went wrong?"
"Nothing went wrong." "You shouldn't look like this," Quirrenbach said. "You look like a man on the edge of death." "Perhaps because I am."
"The scan failed," Zebra said.
"No, Taryn,